Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 2:47 p.m. That is Central Time. Today is January 18th. The Nasdaq today is down a couple of percent, and this is back testing the low from last week. And it is certainly below the peak that was seen in September. So we can clearly then conclude that we're dipping back into the underlying range. And this is also approaching the region of the 200-day moving average. So let's just put this on a weekly chart. And then we can see just how persistent the advance has been over the course of the last almost 2 years, with a succession of ranges, one above another. So this is an inconsistency. So it's not a major trend inconsistency, but it's certainly something to pique the interest of bears. And of course, we are seeing a significant deterioration in some of the more speculative portions of the market. So let's first, before looking at those, look at some of the mega cap companies. Microsoft is right back in the region of the upper side of the range and the 200-day moving average, and down a couple of percent in here today, but that's following a what in historical terms would be a very large purchase, but relative to the size of the company's market cap, it's chump change when they bought Activision today. And then of course you had Take-Two buying Zynga yesterday, but so far still a consistent trend and approaching an area of potential support. So I think it's important to highlight the consistency still, even though we've had the reversions to the mean for some of these companies. And of course, Apple has got further to go, but it has been particularly resilient. And what do these companies have compared to some of the weaker companies? Well, let's look at some of the companies that struggle for profits. So Netflix has a failed upside break. It's now coming back down to test the lower side of the range that persisted from 2020 through to 2021. I had a very interesting conversation in Saudi Arabia with the developer of the first Arabic language Netflix production. And he confirmed my suspicions that they produce to a formula. So they have an algorithm, and when they submitted their draft, then Netflix came back and said, well, no, you can't do it like that. You have to shoot it exactly how we tell you to, because that's how we know that we can create engagement. But the problem is that that formulaic way of making products, and then it means that every one of their productions tends to be similar. At least that's true of their series, whereas it's a little different when they're producing movies with big name actors. So I think that's an important characteristic, because people can only watch so many times the same thing over and over. I remember I was disgusted when I had spent my pocket money as a child buying books by David Eddings, and the first group of books was actually quite compelling. So I went off and I bought the next group of books, which were an almost plagiaristic way of telling the same story with different characters. And that's exactly what Netflix is doing. And in many respects, it's how K-pop has also been so successful, that they use a formula, but eventually that doesn't work any longer. And I think we're maybe starting to see some of that in the difficulty Netflix has in making profits. And of course, then we have companies like Tesla that are extremely liquidity driven. And yet the share continues to hold this $1,000 level. And I think this is also indicative of some of the rotation that we're seeing in the market, that investors are still willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the ESG sector, and particularly to the energy transition. But Netflix isn't part of that. And of course, then there's the big question about what's going to happen with semiconductors, because there's been a significant drawdown in Nvidia. It's down from 350 to 250. It's still unwinding that accelerated advance, and it's still approaching the region of the trend mean. Saw today that Taiwan Semiconductor is increasing their spend. They're going to be spending upwards of 40 billion this year, and part of that will be to develop a fabless production facility for Intel chips. So Intel is basically splitting up its chip development and chip production businesses, and that's representing a big spend for Taiwan Semiconductor. But they've also just gained a significant customer in Intel, so the share rebounded impressively last week and then starting to give it up a bit in here today. So we've seen where some of the strength is, and we've seen where partial weakness is, but the real weakness is coming through in the smaller companies. So the IPO index is breaking down, and Uber is now the biggest constituent in it. And that, sorry, I didn't type that particularly effectively. It used to be Moderna, but Moderna has fallen so much that it's no longer a major constituent of the IPO ETF. And Uber is now trending downwards, and in fact, it has been trending downwards for a year. It did look like it was going to be able to hold support in the region of the upper side of the range towards the end of last year, and now we're continuing to see a continued drawdown. And of course, all of this has to do with the continued upward pressure on yields. So 10-year yields were up nearly 9 basis points in here today. And this is a substantial breakout, following a very mild consolidation in the region of the peak from back in March. So investors are beginning to price in the potential that the Federal Reserve is going to have to be aggressive in how they raise rates. So the playbook so far has been that they would engage in quantitative, or they would engage in tapering of their quantitative easing, and then they would make a decision about when to raise rates subsequently. And then, following that, they would start to talk about when they would begin to engage in the runoff of their balance sheet. Well, 2 weeks ago, Jay Powell said that they might delay the runoff, and stock markets took heart from that. But now wage growth is picking up, so investors are beginning to think, well, maybe the Federal Reserve is going to have no choice but to, in fact, raise rates aggressively. Now, of course, the question is whether the Federal Reserve is going to panic. And if they were, for example, to raise rates by 50 basis points in March, well, then investors are going to also take panic, and we could easily have a significant drawdown on Wall Street. And of course, we're already seeing a significant sell-off underway in the innovation portion of the market. And the ARK Innovation ETF continues to trend downwards. So we have the acceleration, the massive reaction against the prevailing trend, the period of right-hand extension, and now it's trending downwards. And there's no reason to believe that it's not going to continue lower. And one of the big problems for the biotech sector, despite the promise and the incredible potential for a really promising product line to evolve from the sector, unfortunately, the reality for the biotech sector over the course of the last year has been a winner-takes-all phenomenon. Whichever company was looking like it had the brightest future from vaccine production gained all of the interest from investors. So anything to do with cancer treatments or treatments for rare diseases, anything like that has just simply fallen by the wayside, despite the promise that they hold. Or the promise that genetic solutions could in fact solve problems rather than treat problems. Of course, that's beneficial for humanity, not great for stock market returns. And then, of course, you have the whole slew of potential products that could come through from mRNA technology. And obviously, that's something that could be very promising. But the problem right now is interest rates are rising. And these types of companies still rely on access to cheap, available, abundant liquidity. So we haven't quite seen a big move yet in financial conditions. But it does look like that is inevitable, because we also saw in here today that bank stocks pulled back rather sharply, and financial conditions are still very accommodative, and high yield hasn't moved at all. And certainly the high yield ETF, it does trade more like equity, and it has been pulling back, but not in an especially dynamic manner. And a good part of the reason for that is a lot of the risky companies were given a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to refinance at really accommodative rates over the course of the last 18 months. So that's something that is, I think, going to at least help to support some of these speculative companies, that we don't have the same kind of maturity wall in 2022 that we might have had, for example, in 2020. But then we should pay attention to what's happening in the banking sector, because Goldman pulled back in a very violent manner in here today. So this is a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. We have the failed upside breaks, we have the longer range, the loss of momentum. So this is increasingly looking like it completing type 2 top formation. Now we may see an additional bounce here, and particularly with the Nasdaq in the region of the 200-day moving average, we're in an area of potential support. And then we can think about the smaller cap index, which generally tends to be more interest rate sensitive, and it's an even lengthier range and an even bigger failed upside break. And this looks really quite top heavy. So if yields continue higher, it is quite likely that the Russell 2000 is going to break lower. And that's going to take a toll on just about everything with a speculative nature. So there must be something that's going up. Well, oil prices are certainly rising, and the resilience of the dividend aristocrats is quite clear. It's still within 4% of its all-time high, and still holding on to the breakout, although it's not going to be completely immune from selling pressure. But oil prices are certainly moving upwards, and we saw a new recovery high in here today, and Brent crude is trading at $87. And this looks like a breakout from a really quite lengthy process of consolidation below $80. Every time it got up to this level, it failed, and now it's pushing on to new high ground. So we certainly need to pay attention to the fact that oil prices are rallying, and the Saudi Arabian index stock market is pushing up and out of its range as well, and it's been going sideways for the better part of 18 years. We had a profound bull market in Saudi Arabia back in 2004 and 5, and I remember sitting on a panel discussion at the World Money Show, or the Money Show in the UK, and one of the other panel members back in 2005 was saying that it was such an incredible advance, and that Saudi Arabians were going out and borrowing money to buy cars and instead investing it in the stock market, and that this was a wonderful sign of a healthy bull market. And of course, it was evidence of bubbly activity. Well, we're a long way from that today, and the constituents of the index are much bigger companies. One thing that I also learned at this conference was that companies have to have profits for at least 3 consecutive years before they're allowed to list on the market. That's true of a number of markets in the region, even Egypt. You're not allowed to list a company on the market until you've had profits for 3 years. So you immediately have greater security and less speculation. Now, of course, in a low interest rate environment, then what that means is that money flows towards the most speculative portions of the market. And the technology sector in the USA has been a magnet for global liquidity. You've often heard me say that capital is global and mobile, so it flows to the most attractive assets, and in a very low interest rate environment, then with an infinite duration, growth becomes highly attractive. So we're definitely also starting to see more interest in value starting to outperform growth. And we have the ratio here, so it's looking increasingly likely that this is at least a base formation and that growth could quite easily break on the upside here. And of course, that is of course very much tied to the outlook for interest rates. The only markets in the world right now, or major stock markets in the world in positive territory, are the UK and Hong Kong. So the FTSE 100 was in negative territory today, but it has put in enough of a rally since the beginning of the year to still have a positive performance. And it's unlikely that it's going to persist on the upside if we see a deeper process of consolidation on Wall Street. We're definitely, though, seeing that a number of the mining companies are pushing on the upside. And BHP Billiton is right at the upper side of its range. Now, we have short-term overbought conditions. So some consolidation really wouldn't be all that surprising. And copper prices were in mildly negative territory today. And of course, we have this continued argument about whether we're in a secular or a cyclical bull market for commodities. This is exactly the same kind of argument that we had back in 2003 and 2004. And it persisted for a long time. And the LME Metals Index is right in the region of its peak from back in 2011 and 2007. And those were important peaks because they were a precursor to global growth slowing down. And, of course, in the case of 2007, reversing. And the removal of global liquidity. So, obviously, if the Federal Reserve is in the business of raising rates and potentially even balance sheet runoff, well, then that is going to siphon some liquidity out of the market. So that is directly comparable to 2011. But then, of course, we have the other question, and it's about carbon emissions. Because carbon emissions are still really quite firm. And they were up in here today again. So if this is the case, well, it's logical that carbon emissions coupled with higher oil prices are going to increase inflationary pressures on one hand, but also the cost of production for just about everything, but most particularly other commodities. And that's just another hurdle that the cost of production will have to, or the incentive to go off and increase production will have to overcome in order to boost supply. So commodity bull markets can be defined as the rising cost of marginal production. Oil and energy are an internal component of that. Tax and regulation are another. And I think we can put carbon emissions into that tax on production. And then, of course, regulatory obstacles, most particularly in terms of cost and timing, are an additional consideration. So all of those act as an inhibiting factor in a swift increase in production. But if we're still in a global recovery overall, and if commodity prices remain steady, because one thing that is quite clear is if interest rates continue to rise, we'll have a short-term growth scare. And generally speaking, the Federal Reserve hasn't shown any kind of stomach to tolerate a growth scare. And they may begin to realize that it's going to be difficult to raise rates and that there will be consequences in terms of growth because mortgage rates are rising, wage rates are rising. If growth starts to moderate, then we might even see growth in house prices start to moderate, demand start to moderate for consumer goods. Those would have knock-on effects. Demand for labor might moderate. So all of those types of factors could contribute to the Federal Reserve deciding that perhaps this isn't such a great time to be removing liquidity. And of course, if the stock market continues to pull back, then that will also have a knock-on effect. So we're in a tense environment. But anything that produces a strong cash flow or is tied to a real-world asset that has the potential for its price to rise, well, that should do well in a rising price environment. So physical stuff does well in a rising interest rate environment, and reliability of cash flows and pricing power do well in a rising interest rate environment. But things that rely on an infinite duration don't. So that's exactly what we're seeing in the market right now. Now, what I thought was also interesting today is gold prices were pretty much unchanged. And the price is down about $5, but off its low on the day. And silver was up at one point about 60 cents. So silver was up and platinum was up, and gold shares were in negative territory. So that would suggest that equity investors are taking some profits. Gold hasn't quite been able to fire, but the more illiquid silver is attracting some interest. And I think that it's inevitable that if we see commodities doing better, and particularly if industrial resources continue to steady, then that's going to act as an incentive to go off and find underpriced other physical assets, and most particularly those that we dig out of the ground. The big question, of course, will be how much money will come through from different governments to support the energy transition. The USA doesn't seem to be quite ready yet to engage in additional fiscal stimulus or to fund big spending programs, but they are going to spend $750 billion on an infrastructure package that's already been passed. Europe, on the other hand, is much more gung-ho about the energy transition, and they need to be. With rising interest rates, then we have the potential in the short term that it's going to inhibit spending. But ultimately, when we see more, there's obviously the potential that we have a deeper correction in stock markets, then that's going to have an impact on growth and then also the ability of the Federal Reserve and other central banks to limit access to liquidity. And then we get the rebound. So I think that we're certainly in a corrective phase, that we're going to be presented with a buying opportunity, but not until central banks see the error of their ways. And of course, there is the potential that they make a mistake and that they tighten too much. And the yield curve spread is still around 82 basis points because right now the long end is rising faster than the short end, but the 2-year yield is trending higher. And at some point it will accelerate past the 10-year and we'll have an inverted yield curve. So it is likely that this cycle is going to be shorter than the last. And if we get an inverted yield curve at some point in 2022, well, then that could increase the potential that we get a recession at some point in 2024. But obviously, this is a corrective phase, so we are going to see just how deep of a pullback we get on the major indices. The one thing that I think is important to pay attention to is how companies like Google and Amazon perform. And perhaps most importantly, Amazon, because these are the big data centers. And just about all of Amazon's profit comes from its data center business. And if the growth companies are deteriorating, well, they're the customers for the big data center providers. And if your customers are doing bad, then your business is doing badly. And obviously, then that could have an impact on earnings. So it would suggest that the Q4 earnings and then potentially Q1 earnings or Q2 earnings could surprise in the downside for some of these companies. And then that would have a knock-on effect and is quite likely to be priced into the market before the earnings, in fact, occur. But most importantly, Amazon has dropped down and it's broken the sequence of higher reaction lows and encountered resistance in the region of the 200-day moving average. So this isn't nearly as bullish a trend as it used to be, and it's an awfully lengthy range. And of course, everyone has been conditioned to expect lengthy ranges from Amazon, but no one's really been conditioned to expect really big drawdowns. So it's certainly something to pay attention to because Amazon is probably more at risk from the deterioration of the innovation sector and the IPO sector than any of the other mega cap companies. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.